This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Captain Chip Harding with the City of Charlottesville Police Department joins us in studio. Thank you, sir, for coming in. Happy holidays to you.
Back to you.
Now, I understand you also have that cold cough thing going around. I do.
The whole family's got it.
I'm so sorry
Everybody
to hear that.
Everybody but the dog is sick.
I am very sorry to hear that. I know Allison and I fortunately have been spared, but I know the kids have been just coughing like crazy. I mean, waking up every hour all night long.
Yeah.
Cough. They just can't seem to stop. So I hope it clears up soon.
I need a month in Hawaii if somebody wants to send some money, and I'd appreciate it.
There you go. Chip joins us in studio, and of course, phone lines are open, folks, at 977-1070. We wanted to have you come by to talk about this DNA database. There's a million ways we could tackle this story here, but before we do, can you give folks a little Chip Harding 101, where you're from, how long you've been in Charlottesville, and what you do with the police department?
Yeah, originally from Fluvanna County, graduated with a degree in social work from Virginia Commonwealth University, worked locally as a juvenile probation counselor for 4 years, and been with the Charlottesville Police since March 1st, 1978, and loving every minute of it.
1978.
Right, I'm an old man.
And the downtown mall, of which we were just talking about a few minutes ago, was brand new then.
You're right. I remember seeing them put the bricks down.
Do you really?
I do.
What is the DNA database? When we say that, or we read it in a newspaper, or we hear somebody on the news talking about it, what exactly is it?
And actually, Coy, there's a couple of data banks that we're talking about. One is a data bank made up of suspect profiles. In other words, we go to a crime scene, somebody's been raped or murdered or robbed or whatever, and there's DNA material left behind. It could be saliva, it could be blood, it could be any hair sample. That is submitted to the lab. A profile, DNA profile, is made of that, and it goes into a data bank of unsolved crimes. And then we have a DNA data bank that people are familiar with, and that's of convicted felons in Virginia. If you are convicted of a felony, they're supposed to, and this has been the issue recently, take a saliva sample from you. For $50, a profile's done, and it goes into the data bank. So therefore, when you get out, if your profile shows up at a crime scene, it'll match up. And when we send the unknown against the knowns, if it matches up, we can determine that you were at that crime scene. And that happened just recently. In September, we had a rape, a university law student identified the wrong person. We didn't know at the time. We arrested a man. And just a few days later, someone else, you know, the profile was developed from the crime scene of her rape, and it hit in the data bank on the correct person. And John Henry AG pled guilty recently and will be sentenced up to 2 life sentences in January.
So we arrested the wrong guy here in Charlottesville,
right,
based on a first-person account for a
witness.
First-person
account, right. And the DNA data bank hit the right person who after that confessed to the crime.
So it not only helps to convict the guilty, it helps to protect the innocent.
It does. And a lot of people don't know it, but the Innocence Project that Barry Sheck of the OJ fame, you know, started.
Yeah.
They freed close to 200 people, over a dozen on death row to date.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
And
DNA.
These are people that have been tried, convicted, appealed, convicted, and they're waiting to die. They're waiting to be killed by whatever state they happen to be in, and they're innocent.
And they're innocent. So DNA is really telling a lot of folks in the criminal justice system something they don't want to hear, that we've been inaccurate in some of our cases in the past. It's kind of scary stuff.
Captain Chip Harding, our guest with the City of Charlottesville Police Department since 1978. And tell folks a little bit about your history with this, because you've been involved and a leader here in Virginia in making this happen in the Commonwealth, right?
Well, I have a real interest in it. Back in 97, the Little List girls were abducted and murdered out of Spotsylvania, and I knew the grandfather, and I wanted to help out. So I started looking into why we hadn't had any DNA hits that I was familiar with in Virginia, and I went out and met with Dr. Farrar, who oversees forensics in the state of Virginia, and he showed me about 50,000 samples of blood in refrigerators in Richmond that had never been analyzed because the money had never been appropriated. And so I started a citizen group, and we lobbied the General Assembly in Georgia Island, put it about $9 million in his outgoing budget. And what happened was, Coy, it was pretty exciting, is that we went from averaging 2 hits a year in Virginia to almost 3 hits a day in Virginia, and we're a national leader. We've got over 250,000 profiles in that data bank right now. In Charlottesville alone, in about a 4-year period, we had 57 hits, and we were told by national experts that we, per capita, We're leading the entire country, just our little town of 40,000. And I looked in the national database, and there's a 10 to 15 states combined, whole states, that haven't had the number of hits from crime scenes that we've had right here in Charlottesville.
That's incredible. I had no idea that I knew Virginia was a leader of this, but I didn't know Charlottesville, and of course that's due to your leadership. Charlottesville itself is a leader in the nation for this kind of thing. What's been I can see lots of positives here, but what has been the criticism of this? What has been, whether it's a libertarian or somebody that just doesn't like the idea of taking DNA from somebody guilty or innocent, what has that been like?
Well, you always have the big brother argument that you got groups of people that don't want any intrusion by any oversight by any government agency for anything. And then you have some of the ACLU attorneys that want to argue that there's a possibility your sample could be taken, tested, and could be forwarded on to some insurance company that could forecast that you're going to have cancer or some, you know, debilitating disease in the future. And that's just, it just can't happen. It's just a biometric fingerprint. It's called junk DNA. And it, the sample they take and the way they process it, it can't yield that type of results.
Now that's interesting because you do hear that a lot that, oh my gosh, if they take my DNA for the police, it's going to end up at my insurance company and I won't get covered. But what if I hear you right, you can't do that kind of, they can't learn those kind of health facts based on this type of DNA.
That's what I'm told by the experts that are doing it. Plus, there's laws and legislation in place that keep them. It's very tightly regulated once that sample goes down there. And what I'm most interested in right now is I thought everything was up and running and we were doing great things in Virginia, and we started working on our serial rape task force. You know, we have 7 cases that have been connected with DNA to the Charlottesville Albemarle serial rapist. As a matter of fact, we wouldn't have a serial rapist if it wasn't for the DNA data bank, because back when I was in early years of being an investigator, there's no way I would have connected these cases with the amount of time in between them and the behaviors he's displayed at each case. They haven't always been dissimilar, but in some cases I've looked at them coming in going, that's not going to be our guy, and DNA said, yes, it is. Other cases have come in, we said, that's probably going to be him. DNA says, no, it's not. So we've been able to link these 7 cases.
Wow.
But
the same DNA at all the crime scenes.
The same DNA at all the crime scenes. But in searching persons of interest, we started seeing there were people that had prior felony convictions and should have been in the DNA data bank and were not. So I talked to probation and parole recently, and this summer they had an intern pull 600 samples of felons under supervision in Charlottesville Albemarle, just to compare it to the data bank, and found that 125 that should have been in the data bank were not. I did some more examination, and I talked to some people in Richmond that had run the sex offender registry against the data bank and found that 21% on the sex offender registry weren't in the data bank. So then I called the woman that oversees the data bank itself. Now, she's not responsible to go out and collect the things, but she's responsible for them once they're received by the Department of Forensics. And she said, well, you know, I've seen samples coming through that had a prior felony history, and I know they should have already been there, and they weren't. So that's where I came up with a figure of about 20%, and I don't know if that's accurate or not. I don't know how large the problem is statewide, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised if we're not missing 50,000 samples or better. Now, what does that mean? If you look at statistics of the success of the database, we've had over 3,600 hits in the 250,000 profiles. So if tonight we went out and found 50,000 people that are convicted felons and put those samples in, tomorrow morning we'd have roughly 735 hits, of which we know statistically 5 to 10% would be serial murders or rapists.
And those crimes would be solved right away.
They would be solved. Bing, bing, bing.
And these are crimes that are open now, assuming they're open around the state that folks like you are dealing with and scratching their heads, and you know you got somebody out there and you can't find him.
And it may not be our serial rapist that gets caught in this, but it's going to be somebody's serial rapist. But how would we feel? How would our victims here feel in Charlottesville if they knew that in 1997, when he attacked the first woman in Waynesboro, Virginia, it should have hit in a data bank because he committed an offense in 93 or 94 where a sample should have been taken but wasn't or didn't make it into the data bank? So he keeps reoffending, keeps raping, and just destroying folks when he should actually already be in the penitentiary. We don't know the answer to that.
Captain Chip Harding is our guest with the City of Charlottesville Police Department. Well, Chip, the obvious question then is, why aren't these samples going into the bank?
Well, the local adult probation parole have been very proactive, and they sent letters out to the 120-some folks that need to be in the system that they still had under supervision. And then what they found was 30 had already gotten off supervision since this summer. 30 were running and hiding or in jail, and they have to locate them. So 60 letters, we think, were received. And 2 weeks ago, 42 people showed up, and they took samples. Our guys from forensics went in and helped them out.
Well, now that's a positive. That's a good thing.
Yeah, 42 people came in, and I got a chance to interview almost all of them as he came in the door. And there was no consistency. Interview one fella, yeah. I've given my sample 3 times when I was in the penitentiary. I don't know why it's not in the data bank. Another fellow, I've been in the penitentiary. No one's ever asked me for it. Had a guy that was who I know in 92, who was a lawyer in town, convicted of, I think it was embezzlement. And he said, Chip, I've never done time, but I've been under supervision since 92. It's the first time anybody's ever asked me for it. So, you know, that's bothersome because they have fail safes that at certain points in the system, the DNA is supposed to be taken. And out of these 42, 6 or 8 came from other jurisdictions. In other words, they were convicted, say, in Fairfax County of a rape and got out from having done their time, and they're still not in the system. You know, they're down here now living in our area and never been put in the data bank. We don't know why. So I wrote a letter to Governor Kane, and I asked him if he would get this Virginia State Police, and they say they have the competency to do this, to run all convicted felons since 1990, run that data bank against the DNA data bank and see what the difference is. How big a number are we looking at?
How many felons numbers do we, and then how
it
many?
Should be
that
aren't.
Should be the number
right.
In the bank, right?
And then the other, we got a couple other things going on because you've got people that transfer in from other states that commit felonies. And I met 3 or 4 of these types.
But they're living in our community.
They're living
now.
In our community, and they have to agree to abide by Virginia law, so they should be in the data bank when they're received in by the probation officer, and they're not in the data bank. So it's all over the board, and I think they're going to find out it's all over the state of Virginia. Their problems have got to be fixed.
Is it because it's such a new thing, and perhaps you've got a lot of people who work in the system who aren't like you, who aren't necessarily very familiar with the technology, aren't necessarily familiar with how easy it is to get a felon logged into the bank with their DNA logged in?
I don't have the answer for that. There are mandates and policies. I've talked to people in the Department of Corrections, Department of Juvenile Justice. They all have policies in place. DOC and Juvenile Justice have reception centers when you come in, you know, to the system. They're supposed to check against the data bank. If you're not in, they're supposed to take a sample before you're released. They're supposed to check again. If you're not in, take a sample. So I don't know how people are making it all the way through with no samples.
Yeah, like how many times do you need a rule in there that says do this, and it still doesn't happen?
I talked to a federal probation officer just recently, whose name I promised I wouldn't call, who said they're scrambling around trying to take samples from people that have been paroled from the federal system that made it through the federal system without test samples being taken. And what it means to Virginia is that there are people going to be victimized, raped, and murdered this week in Virginia that don't need to be, because these folks should have their samples in the system, and we probably should identify them if they're a serial predator last year or 10 years ago. You know, the technology was there and the laws were in place, but, you know, human beings fail somewhere.
Detective, Captain Chip Harding is our guest. Phone lines are open at 977-1070. For your comments and questions, would love to have you join the conversation. Is there there's a data bank here in Virginia? Is
right.
And there's a federal bank,
CODIS.
Is there a national that combines all of these things?
Yeah, well, that's what CODIS does.
Or
what
do you have to like run them through each one?
No, Virginia, and I'm not a DNA expert per se. When you get into the, you know, the technology, but when the profile's developed in Virginia, when you're in a DNA felon data bank, that's then downloaded in a computer and it's forwarded to CODIS, which is run by the FBI. And the FBI, I think, has about 3.5 million samples in that now. Which is disheartening nationally is there's a number of states. You know, Charlottesville, we've had about 70 hits, and there are a number of states right now, I just checked a little while ago. You've got Vermont has never had a hit. You've got Rhode Island with 2 hits. South Dakota's only had 4 because they've never enacted the legislation necessary to force people to give a DNA sample.
So they don't have much of a bank to run a test on anyway.
Exactly, exactly. And probably those citizens are sitting there watching CSI on TV thinking their states are, whoa, they're just like on TV. You know, they don't understand it's not happening. They're not taking advantage of the technology, so some of their women and some of their children are being raped and murdered when it's not necessary for that to happen.
Why is it not happening? Is it simply a matter of funding? Or is it a fear, perhaps, that this is some, like you say, some Big Brother thing? To me, it just makes sense that it helps fight crime. And I'm all for anything helping to fight crime. And it makes sense if you're a felon and you're in jail, then you give the state your DNA. It seems like a no-brainer.
I agree with you. And I don't know the answer. Because I look at Virginia, and I don't know why all the samples sat in a refrigerator, you know, until 1998.
And never made it into the bank. Yeah.
And then I thought everything was going great, and I don't know why all the samples that should be in there aren't in there now. So when I look at other states, I can't really answer that. I know if there's some rich fella out there who would like to give me $100,000 a year, I'd love to go around and go to the different legislative bodies in each state and lobby that these states that aren't on board get on board. And I know that Congress has appropriated funds and incentives for states to get on board. Now, I've talked at a couple of national conventions, and I've been called to the side, and I've been told that I don't understand that there's even a larger issue here, and that is you've got to have people trained that know how to process crime scenes. You've got to have laboratory people trained and in place, you know, to do it once it's been received. And a lot of these states aren't up to speed with that either. So even if the laws were passed, they're still behind the curve as far
even
as
if they get a swab or something, they
right.
don't know have any. They
yeah,
don't have
I
the
wouldn't have
fixed.
Any idea how to process saliva
right.
from a crime scene. You know, and you got to have people with the.
Well, it sounds like a great, and this may have problems all its own, but it sounds like a wonderful opportunity for private enterprise for a company that does this kind of thing. To contract with a municipality and, you know, say, we can do this for you.
Yeah, now they do that some. Bodie Technology did that when we had the 50,000 samples. Paul Farrar outsourced 2,000 a week. And our first cold hit in Charlottesville occurred in October of 99. We had a little girl, her name is Sarah Hovis, and she uses her name so I can say it now. Beautiful girl, senior at University of Virginia, 4-0 student. Mom helped make her bed up that night, first day of school. She went to a party, came home, was walked home by a friend of her boyfriend's to make sure she's safe. In the middle of the night, wakes up in total darkness, cold steel barrel of a gun against her head. She's robbed and raped by a man she could never see. And it hit in the data bank. And that man is now doing which amounts to a life sentence. And without that technology in the database,
they never would have caught him.
We wouldn't have any idea.
Because she didn't see him.
Right.
And the only thing left behind was the DNA.
Yeah, he left saliva on it. He forced her downstairs at gunpoint along with her friend and drank from a beer can, had her blindfolded, drank from a beer can and was bragging about what he'd done to her and threw that can in the front yard. And Ralph Barfield, who was our sergeant, ran a forensic unit, picked that can up and got saliva off it that matched our guy.
Well, that's amazing. So it does work.
It absolutely
and that's
works.
That's the number one thing that folks need to understand about this.
It's the greatest.
It works.
Absolutely. Greatest discovery since fingerprints for law enforcement. And for some reason, in some states, they just aren't getting it.
Yeah. It seems to me that this would be money. It's not a lot of money to spend. Think of the impact that this would have around the country if every state was like Virginia when it came to a DNA data bank. I mean, just think of the number of cases that would be solved instantly.
You're right. It would have a huge impact. And, you know, every politician ever runs for statewide or national office, what do they put on a platform? I want to fight violent crime in America. What's the best way to do it? What's a no-brainer? DNA technology is right here in front of you. And some of them just aren't, they just don't get it.
Yeah. Captain Chip Harding is our guest of the City of Charlottesville Police Department since 1978 and one of the nation's leaders when it comes to using DNA to put felons and violent offenders behind bars. What is the latest on the situation with the serial rapist here in our area? Haven't heard about it recently, but the real interesting thing that I hear from you is that we do know it's a serial rapist because of the DNA.
Correct. His last attack that we're aware of occurred August 18, 2004, so we're approaching that two-and-a-half-year mark, and he has jumped 2.5 years before. That's the longest period of time he's gone without us knowing that he's attacked somebody. What we think's happening is that we're having some attacks that aren't being reported. Up in Columbus, Ohio, Ohio State University had a similar type rapist. It's been, I think, 2 years ago now. And they were in the situation with their data bank that we were back in 98. They had a bunch of samples and the money hadn't been appropriated. Well, that money got appropriated. They had a task force going and eventually the sample was analyzed that this guy had been taken 3 or 4 years before and it hit. So they arrested him. They brought him in and he said, for example, well, why are you calling me the East Market Street rapist? And they said, because you raped 7 women on East Market Street. And he said, well, that's nothing of what I did over here and over here. And supposedly, he took them around and ported 40-some other homes, calling the women's first name where he'd rape women who had never called the police. So we know statistically that rape is a very underreported crime, and we feel like we've had victims in the Charlottesville area that have not reported it. And I can understand sometimes why women don't report it. But we have a on our website, the police website, several ways that a victim could contact us and remain anonymous. They could write us a letter. You know, they could call in anonymously and talk and let us ask questions, because you never know if you've been a victim of a stranger rapist when it, you might have, you know, something that's pivotal in a case.
Yeah, it could be that one woman who's not reporting it for whatever reason who might have some little shred of evidence that
shred.
Will tie in with something else that'll find the guy.
It could be. And I certainly don't want to make any rape victim feel bad or feel shameful. But if there's any victims out there, I would like to see them call the Sexual Assault Resource Agency and make a third party report, or contact us, and you don't have to give us your name.
And what's the website and the information that they need?
Well, you can go on the main Charlottesville City website and click over on the police department, and it gives you a whole lot of go-tos on that. Or anyone that wants could call my office at 970-3265.
970-3265.
Right.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for everything that you're doing and that you have done. You really have been, I want to use these words lightly, but you really have been a national leader. And we have a lot to be proud of in you. You're right here in our community and have an incredible impact right here in our backyard. But you've been setting an example for law enforcement officials around the country to follow. And I would love to see them follow your example a little bit more aggressively.
Well, thanks for those comments. You give me more credit than I deserve, but it is something I'm passionate about, and I feel like we can prevent a lot of people from going through really bad experiences.
Before we let you go, the fact that in Virginia we don't have a lot of felons here that we know now aren't in the databank, what's happening? Do you think the state police are going to run this test and compare the number of felons?
I wrote Governor Kane, and I got a response back from Secretary Marshall, who said that he's put together a group with Department of Corrections, State Police, Department of Forensics, Juvenile Justice, and they're now doing analysis to see if they can determine the scope of the problem. And he assured me in the letter that they'll do whatever means it takes to correct it.
Well, we ought to hold him to that.
Yes, sir.
We'll follow up with that and talk to you soon. We'll get an update. Captain Chip Harding of the City of Charlottesville Police Department, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at SevillePodcast.com.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.